Weekender is back, guys, and it's a relief. Okay, in this episode, all you have to do is remember to subscribe, like, and comment. And if you can, give us a share. It really helps us out. And you could win Chaos Space Marines Battle Force. Beautiful, beautiful kit, this one. As well as that, every viewer can get a piece of free 3D printable terrain. This bad boy is called a Necrosis Tomb Pillar, or Pillar Tomb. And we are giving that away. So if you stay tuned to later in the episode, we'll tell you all about that. Right, let's get stuck in. Weekend starts now. Hey guys, and welcome to the weekend. Yes! Right, before we get stuck into the show, we've got to remind you that we are currently in Snaganormy month. I say Snaganormy month, it might go on a bit longer than a month. Yeah, we're rocking some of our Snaganormy gear right now. Snaganormy is all about just expanding the reach of our hobby. So it's about grabbing your friends who have maybe never ever played and getting them to play a game with you.
Prime candidates. Maybe you've got mates who are big into 40K video games.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, there's like a miniatures version of this.
Mm-hmm. That's
because they'll know the universe and stuff, and then it's just a matter of going, right, let me take you through a physical game of this.
Same with your guys that might play Call of Duty. You could bring them in and show them a bit of Bolt Action or a bit of Flames of War. You know, there's so many crossovers now. You know, the Marvel stuff. You know, mm-hmm.
Marvel's an easy one.
Yes.
You know, because it's just like, oh, you really enjoy Marvel. Well, we could play a game of that. What would you do with Captain America at this point?
Total Rome.
Total Rome.
Good shout. Into like Total Rome or Total.
Yeah, any of the Total games. Yeah.
Total War Warhammer.
Star Wars?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Star Trek?
So, Star Trek, yes. Bit lesser known. But anyway, the bottom line of it is it's an opportunity for us as a gaming community to reach out a little bit further, reach out to those folks that either haven't ever played or maybe just haven't played in a while. We'll call them a semi-normie. And we bring them back into the fold. A lapsed normie.
So you want to bring them back and make them a recovering normie?
We basically want to take a flaccid normie and make it a proper, full-on, hard normie.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Right. Yep.
I think it's beautiful. Do you think I have friends? that's the biggest thing I've taken away from this.
Yeah. And for our UK viewers, if they want to support what we're doing, there is the merch.
Mm. Yes.
Can you bring up the merch?
We have the merch.
Yep.
Yep, there's the merch.
We've got plenty of colours this time. There's also a 10% sort of discount thing going on at the minute. Hobbywarehouse.co.uk if you buy during this month. Mm-hmm.
So Hobby Warehouse, a little cottage industry. They're not long started up. They've been doing the merch for the t-shirts and stuff for us for a while now. Mm-hmm. So we basically said, look, if you want to grab a Snaganormy t-shirt, you wear it to a club or wear it to the pub, and somebody goes,
challenge.
What is that? Well, I'm glad you asked. Yeah. Have you been playing 40K online, or are you interested in World War II? You know, this is how we do it.
Are you secretly a geek?
Yes.
Bear in mind, Hobby Warehouse is, like you say, a cottage industry basically getting up and
running. Mm-hmm.
So US delivery in European other countries and stuff is difficult for them at the moment. So it is limited to the UK at this point.
Yeah.
But if you ever come to one of our events, they also do t-shirts for those for us, which are always really cool.
Justin.
Yes.
I feel it coming on.
Uh-oh.
It's been too long. It's time for Warren Meets Matt. Man, I have been having Matt withdrawal symptoms, but I'm about to cure that now with this beautiful mat. It's the North Pass mat from Pwork Wargames. Right, where do I start? Firstly, this is one of those kind of all-rounder of mats. This is one that you would have in your collection that is going to give you complete versatility. It's going to be perfect for your fantasy games, for your Dark Age and historical games, but you'd have no problem putting post-apocalyptic on this, and heck, even sci-fi. It reminds me of some of the Halo maps from times gone by. Let's have a look at the detail on the mat. Resolution, fantastic. You can even see how the turf is cracking in the mat. And then a little bit further up, you can see the individual stones and rocks. The frosting is intermittent through the mat. So the mat basically gives you that green and white contrast, which brings me to how well it works with terrain. So here, I've pulled out some of the Viking terrain that we've had. Now, we heavily frosted this stuff, and I think it just sits beautifully with this mat. So if you line a door up like that, you know, check that out. You know, a little bit of frosting. You know, there's lots of little places where you can position your terrain. That's always a real bonus for me whenever the mat helps guide me with places that I can put the terrain. Trees, fully frosted trees, look absolutely fine on this mat. No problem at all. I have no issues with the blend of those kinds of trees with it. However, if you don't want to go with the frosted stuff, the mat works equally well with your standard green. So your unfrosted buildings, here we have the beautiful Stoic arms from foreground. So you could just pop that on there. Popping some trees in and around there, and it just works great. Love it, absolutely love it. So design-wise, once again, let me just pull you into just a couple of the little details. So here you can see some of the little blossoms and things popping up through the cracks in the earth. Moving back a little bit, the frosted areas, look at the dirt. It's just exactly as you would see in melting kind of snow and ice. It's a really, really good mat. Really good mat. The material's spot on. You can't really go wrong with this neoprene stuff. And the print quality and color vibrancy, excellent. It's got a great three-dimensional feel to it, which is something a lot of the mats from P-Works, Deep Cut and all have been able to do these days, that the mats almost have a 3D kind of effect, a three-dimensional feel to them. And that really gets my juices going, I've got to say. Yep, North Pass mat from P-Works. Two thumbs up for this one. So in the news segment, first thing I want to do is I want to do our Indie of the Week. So it's something that we're trying to do in our Weekenders where we give the little guy a shout. So what I had thought was, as well as giving the little guy a shout, let's make him the first story, man. Ben, let's kick off with our Indie of the Week. Who is it this week?
Yeah, so the Indie of the Week that we're looking at for today is Agama Miniatures, and this focuses in on a news story that we did during the week where we looked at their new Etruscan previews. Uh-huh. For those of you who don't know about the Etruscans, they were an early Italian empire that was soon assimilated into the Roman Empire later on, and a lot of their influence is carried over into what, you know, is now known as the Roman Empire that you see in the movies and that kind of thing as well. They also drew a lot of stuff from their ancient Greek past as well, so they had a lot of ties with all the people in Greece, be they Athens or Sparta, and they drew a lot of that into their architecture, their weapons, their fighting styles, and all that kind of thing. And so what we actually got to see in the preview in the news for this week was a look at not only just some of their command figures, but also a bunch of their warriors that are coming out as well, because they're going to be trying to focus on bringing out these guys towards the end of February, maybe through a Kickstarter at the start of March and stuff like that as well, which is very good. But yeah, really awesome, very nicely detailed figures that come from a guy called Stavros, who's done some stuff in the industry as well before. Yeah. A fantastic looking set of miniatures for the Etruscans, and they've also got some loads of other bits and pieces in there too as well. So
where are the Etruscans from?
Asked this as well as soon as I'd seen it. Jay, yeah. Where are they from?
Where were the Etruscans from?
Northwest. If you start at Rome and sort of run up the northwest coast, yes, and then cut across the peninsula, more or less chopping off the top of modern Italy.
Yeah.
That down as far as Rome, and that's where they were.
So these guys were one of the original tribes of Italy,
Yeah, like one of the hill tribes, and before Republican, Well, when they've been Republic of Rome before the Kingdom of Rome started extending and taking over big chunks.
Yeah.
You could call them almost like proto-Roman, yeah. effectively, in that mm-hmm. respect, yeah.
So. Well, on the topic of Romans, I think they do Romans as well then, yeah?
Yeah, so Agamemnon have got a whole range of different, both plastic and metal miniatures, but we've got a couple of the looks at both the metal miniatures for both the Romans and the Carthaginians that they've got on their web store right now, which is very cool. So the Romans are looking very, very awesome. They've got a whole bunch of different things. So they've got character models, they've got command elements as well, loads of different troops, a lot of them in really nice fighting poses, which I think is really cool. And there's lots of different nods towards different areas that they would have been fighting in as well, which I think is really nice. You've even got some of the auxilia as well that would have fought alongside the Romans, which I think is really nice. And yeah, as I say, these guys have been around for actually quite a long time, but it's really nice to dive in and see what they've been doing now recently as well, obviously with the Etruscans. They've even got some plastic kits, as I was saying as well, but yeah, the Romans are looking very nice indeed, especially if this is the kind of period of kind of like Imperial Rome that you want to dive into. They've got lots of different choices for you there.
All 28 mil, Ben, yeah?
Mm. Yeah, so it's all 28 mil, so it's all ready for use in the likes of Hail Caesar and all the other historical war games that are out there right now as well.
So, yeah. And then finally, we with some Carthaginians, or is that how we pronounce it?
Yeah, everybody loves Carthage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, look at those.
Yeah, so you've got these mortal enemies of Rome that you can pit against your Romans there, which is very cool indeed. You've got Hannibal leading the way as well, which is really nice. Again, they've really focused on the idea of having lots of command models to go alongside a lot of the sort of typical forces that you'd find in there. And of course, there's maybe even a few elephants in the range as well, which is pretty awesome.
There we go.
Very cool.
Okay, so that's our Indie of the Week, guys. Head on over to Agemma's Etrusions, or Agemma's for that. Yeah. Right, Ben, what's our first news story this week?
So the first bit of news is something that I was very interested in, and it's for the guys at Atomic Mass Games and Marvel Crisis Protocol. And this is for a preview of the next set of miniatures, so the next duo that are going to be coming up in the near future, Doctor Strange and Wong, who you may remember from the mm-hmm. Doctor Strange movies that were done for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So we've got a really nice dynamic looking sculpt for Doctor Strange himself, the Master of the Mystic Arts, and there's also a miniature for Wong, who is his faithful sidekick, who is a master in martial arts as well as a little bit of magic at the same time. Both of the models have been done to kind of sort of blend in with the aesthetic from the comic book versions of these characters, which I think is really nice, because it's good to give Wong especially a little bit more of an iconic aesthetic on the tabletop that makes him stand out a little bit, because the version of him in the MCU, very cool of course, but it kind of was a bit dark and moody and that kind of thing. So it's nice to see him done in a much more characterful and colourful way.
I wonder if they have issued a preview of the rules for Doctor Strange yet, because to me, he would be one of the most interesting potential characters for some real kind of wacky yeah. rules in the game.
I've not seen any of them, but I don't think any of the previous previews they've shown off yeah. any of the abilities either. They've only gone with the sculpts, I think.
Yeah, it's something I've seen quite a few times in the Crisis Protocol groups on like Facebook and stuff. They actually don't really like you posting pictures of the rules up on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the things that Atomic Mass Games actually do quite a lot is they do a bunch of live streams, and they tend to do a lot of previews nearer the release of the models
yeah.
In sort of gameplay. So hopefully in the near future we'll see some stuff for Doctor Strange and Wong. But I know right now, I think it's sort of around this period, I think this weekend, they're going to be releasing the likes of Thor and Valkyrie and Hel and Loki as well. So if you want to get those models, they should be out very soon in friendly local gaming stores and the like. So
fantastic.
Watch out for those.
Yeah. For me, Doctor Strange, if there was any possibility of having it muck with time on the tabletop, I think that'd be just mad.
So right. You want him to break the laws of nature?
I would love him to break that. But that's what Doctor Strange is all about.
I know.
So it makes perfect sense to have him break the game.
Oh, so what? The game ends and he gets one final roll on a 4-up. No, none of that happened.
Yes.
I won.
We go right back and play the game all over again.
Mamamoo, I've come to bargain.
There's a version of Doctor Strange out there that's 12 hours long, and it just hits that point, and it loops 10 hours. I'm coming to bargain.
Someone had to do it.
Yeah.
Right, next up, we have some Blackstone Fortress news and the House of Chains in our Necromunda.
Yeah, so one of the big things that the guys at Games Workshop are doing when it comes to Necromunda now is they're moving things forward to present effectively codices for a bunch of the different gangs to add lots of new elements and new plastic instances to the range. So the first of the gangs that's going to be dealt with is House Goliath, and they get a new book which is called The House of Chains, which introduces rules and scenarios for you to take the House Goliath on that little extra step, and it introduces this new plastic kit which includes the Goliath Stimmers and the Forgeborn. So if you were going to be trying to set up a little bit of a Necromunda gang that had, you know, the likes of Juvies and some of the bigger, chunky warriors that you want to get into the mix as well, this is the kind of book that you want to be aiming for. So yeah, we've got to look at the plastic kits and everything for this, and I think the models are looking pretty cool. I've always been a big fan of the two sort of warbands that they started out for the new version of Necromunda. So obviously you've got the House Goliath, and you had the House Escher as well. Really like the color schemes and the sculpts they've been doing for those. Absolutely fantastic. But yeah, if you're interested in House Goliath, then there's some really nice options on that front coming up very, very soon.
And I hear, Ben, that there's a kind of like a Nurgly expansion for Blackstone Fortress.
Yeah, so the guys that behind Warhammer Quest Blackstone Fortress have also created a new scenario pack for that as well. This one is, as you say, based around Nurgle, and it introduces a whole bunch of the different models that were existed already in the range. They've been brought into the game for a new adventure. The adventure is focused around the idea of the Nurgle Space Marines infiltrating parts of the Blackstone Fortress, and you as your band of heroes and miscreants have to go in there to try and stop not just the Poxwalkers and the Nurgle Space Marines themselves, but also the actual plague spreading throughout the Blackstone Fortress and infecting it at a very sort of base level as well. So this one sounds very, very cool. And if you enjoy the likes of Warhammer Quest, Blackstone Fortress, another option for you to dive into when it comes to storytelling on the tabletop.
Nice.
Blackstone Fortress has been a superb exploration of 40K. For me, in many ways, I prefer it to Necromunda.
Well, I know what Jerry's probably just biting his tongue going, oh, look, Justin, you have to buy another book.
No, I was just thinking I would vent Blackstone Fortress into space. That's how I was feeling.
You just vent the whole thing.
There's plenty more people in the Imperium that can repopulate that.
Open the doors.
I would love to see Jerry as an Imperial Inquisitor.
Yeah.
Just murder them all. It's fine. That planet, exterminate, that's not a problem. It's all fine.
It fit right in.
Yeah, there's absolutely no problem with that at all.
I hear that there's Necromunda models coming out of Forge World now as well, Ben.
Yeah, so this week, the guys at Forge World previewed some of the stuff that they've been doing. So they're going to be handling a bunch of the characters like they've been doing in the past for the likes of Dramatis Personae and Hired Guns as well. And they're going to be creating models for the Chain Lord, the Shacklemen, and two Pit Fighter models as well. Because one of the things that the new book for House Goliath does is it ties in a whole bunch of sort of like ancillary houses into the mix that you might know from the background. And they can fight alongside House Goliath on the tabletop, which I think is really nice. They also talked about their sort of roadmap for what they're doing with Necromunda going forward. So they're going to be dealing with each of the different houses that was sort of like there at the very beginning over the next year, one every quarter. So if you're interested in getting a hold of one of the books, you can check out what they're doing there and sort of plan your time accordingly for the hobby. So,
yeah. Okay.
Cool. You can now tell people you've got the body of a model.
Yeah. I've been telling people that for years, man.
There he is.
Yeah, look at me. It's
sort of one on the far right, obviously.
You know, there will come a time, you know, back in ancient times, right? Big women were considered to be the pinnacle of beauty.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I reckon it's only a matter of time before big warzans are considered the pinnacle of male beauty. And I can wear it, man. Yeah. I can wear it.
You know, look,
I may have a 24-pack rather than a 6-pack, right?
It's the keg.
But do you see when I give cuddles? You know you got them. You know you got them. It's like a bear hug, man. Ooh. The only thing that gets more is a mat.
Let's ask Justin, because we were working on the set recently,
and
you ran your belly right across his head.
No, this was hilarious, because I was down below this table fitting the lights, okay? And I'm sitting there cross-legged, and all I feel is this cold little wipe across my head. And it's just like, I look around, and there's Warren just spinning away, like pirouetting away into the distance.
I was trying to discreetly move past him, and my gut decided it was going to polish the top of his head.
See, the weird thing is, it was wet and sweaty, but I don't know if that was you or me.
Yes. Well, do you know what?
Or perhaps a melding of the two. How horrifying is that?
We mix juices, man. We've got to be careful. That's how we get coronavirus in the world, dude. Right. We have one last bit of Games Workshop news, yeah. Okay?
And this that is. Has me excited.
Are you excited for this?
I am excited for this.
Okay.
Because I know Deanna Stateside has always wanted a specific miniature. She has never been able to own it, but now she will be able to own it. In miniature. In miniature.
And what is it?
The Manta.
The Manta. Tau are coming to Aeronautica.
Yes. Lovely.
Yeah, so this is delving down into that sort of smaller scale, that sort of 8mm scale that Titanicus is made of as well. And this is a new set that is coming out, which sees the Astra Militarum going up against the Tau Empire in a book called Skies of Fire, and obviously the starter set that goes with it. So this is going to be a new way for you to dive into the game with two different forces if you like these ones instead of Orcs, example, from the last one. So yeah, you get all the miniatures, you get a big board for you to play it on, you get a whole massive campaign for you to dive into as well when you get started with this as an introductory level thing. But then there is also another book that's coming called the Taros Air War book, which will also feature a longer running campaign for you to play between the two forces in the sort of war across the planet in the skies, which I think is very cool. As you can see, we've had a look at some of the miniatures, looking very, very nice and detailed, as you can see here as well. I've actually seen some of the stuff that John's done on some of his stuff that he's been doing for Aeronautica Imperialis, and it all looks very, very nice indeed.
Yeah.
Really crisp sculpts and everything. Everybody who seems to be diving into this one really, really enjoys it. And it's another one of those sort of like smaller games within the world of 40,000 from Games Workshop that seems to have captured a lot of hearts. So
yeah, you can have to see without dropping 1,200 quid on it.
I've got something to say.
Yeah?
Love the models. Mm. I absolutely detest the bases. Oh, cut to the base.
All right. There is a very specific gaming reason that those bases are on there. They measure your speed and your altitude, which are two of the key factors in the game. It keeps your board clean without having tokens everywhere, so I'm okay with them.
They're minging. They are absolutely minging. They're just horrible, chunky. There's no elegance to those bases. Look how elegant those models are. Well, the bottom three are maybe a little bit stumpy, but like you look at the Mantas at the top, right? Yeah. And then just look at that chunky base.
So are you okay with this for Imperial stuff, but you would have liked something different?
No. I hate it.
Just in general?
I hate it entirely.
What's
in the game.
What's the bit at the back? Is it supposed to just look like...
It's like a little dial. It's two dials
so there are
for
two
tracking.
Dials in the back.
No. Do you see that thing that just looks like pipes and stuff on the top? What is that?
Oh, it's just a bit of decoration. Oh.
Yeah, it's kind of to help you with seeing the orientation of your base.
Yeah. It's just horrible. It's just really... They just detract from the models. They make the models look like toys. Mm. They make them, it's like Heroescape or something like that. Do you know what I mean? It really detracts from the models. So I would love to get them, but I swear, I would get them and rebase them and play something like Blood Red Skies or something like that with it.
I wonder if anyone has done an aftermarket mod on this base that you can maybe get in. I'm very curious to see if any of like the laser cutting companies have done anything like that.
Just some really nice clear bases would have been.
That base, yeah.
You know, with an elegant stem, okay, and a nice flat clear base that allow the models to do what they need to do.
See, I don't know, because I've watched gameplay videos of this, and the two pieces of information that are on there are so critical.
Yeah.
I think that's just a really clean way to keep track of it. You don't have tokens everywhere, you don't have like stat cards everywhere that you're trying to remember. Is this stat card for that plane, or is it from that plane? And the movement's so dynamic in this game, things are changing position a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they went for function over form, and I kind of agree with them just because of the gameplay.
Oh. I'm just a sucker for the aesthetic.
Would you prefer it if it had just been a black base with a couple of dials in it rather than all the gribbly stuff?
See, this is why I'm saying, has any of the laser cutting companies maybe done an aftermarket one that's prettier?
I just think it's so chunky looking compared to the models. I just think it really detracts from what are beautiful looking models. So it's just my opinion, but I'm right. Right, we're going to go back. We have a couple of historical news coming up. First up, from one of my favorite miniatures and game developers. It's the Studio Tomahawk. Mm. So they have Muskets and Tomahawks second edition coming out.
Yeah, so this one looks very, very cool indeed. But I'm actually going to hand this one over to Jerry because he knows far more about this than I do. And he will be able to talk about this with you guys there. So, yeah.
That's very decent of you. So if you notice that the big thing that they've done with Muskets and Tomahawks is it's moved away from the French Indian Wars and they're going like saga. So where before you had a rule set for a specific period, now they have a black powder rule set and it'll be launching simultaneously with the French and Indian War book.
So that's mm-hmm. Redcoats and Tomahawks.
Yes.
Seeing here.
But so that
let's see it on screen then.
So that's the same period that the original game covered. But instead of having one book, that's your game, now they're going to go, well, we can actually take the black powder period, so from 1700s through to, you know, 1900s, and they can go, well, if you want to play your Napoleonics, you can play your Napoleonics. If you want to play French and Indian Wars, you can do that. If you want to do 1798 Rebellion in Ireland, or whatever it happens to be, they're going to move away where you've got a small booklet that comes out like Redcoats and Tomahawks, and you'll also have specific card decks for the game mechanics. Because the way the game used to play is you would shuffle an amount of cards and draw them, and then that would tell you how many base troops or line infantry or scouts could move and what they could do. Mm-hmm. Now to get the feel of this battle and these forces, you played a bit differently. You'll actually have a card deck specific to the era you're playing in. So you'll be able to go, well, a Redcoat and Tomahawk game plays differently from a Napoleonic Musket and Tomahawk black powder game, simply because of the forces that were involved. And the way they can change that is not just changing the stat line in the book and going, well, they've got an 8 and they've got 5, but actually changing the card deck that comes with it. Mm-hmm. So then you can go, well, they're playing differently, they've got different skills, and every time that you go into a new era or a new nation or whatever it happens to be, whatever way they break them down, that they will have these card decks to give you the flavor and the feel of how they would actually play out on the tabletop as well.
Yeah.
So it broadens the scope of it in the same way they broadened Saga to go, it's not just Dark Ages, it's Dark Ages and Crusades and Late Roman with their three books. And then they brought in Magic.
So this core system
you'll have
is
the core
spreading
system,
where
and then they'll be able to,
it's coverage.
They'll be able to just push out different mm-hmm. black powder eras. It'll be interesting to see where they go, because
mechanics-wise, I've heard that it's moved from D6 to D10. Is this to give it a bit more,
fidelity
in the dice rolls?
You're always going to run into the problem with the D6 that if you change anything, you've only got, well, ones nearly always fail, and if six always succeeds, you've only really got four stats to play with in the middle there before things become the same. And at that point, if they release a Napoleonic book, a Indian Mutiny book, a Boxer Rebellion, well, that's a bit later, they would all still, it would feel like the same list several times.
Yes, yes.
Whereas by having a D10 spread, you can still modify things mm-hmm. Relatively easily with greater fidelity. And like you say, you can have, your elites can be very elite without just being the same as every other elite. You can have those stats. It has a bit more broader scope than Saga does as well, where you only have really armor and aggression. So you've only got the number of dice you roll and what armor you are to be hit with. Mm-hmm. This has the fight, the shoot, the morale, you know, their activation, all of that is tied in. And then you have the card deck as well. So they can very quickly modify things and change things up depending on where they need them to be within the system.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how it all will play out, because it was very popular and they skipped over it. They actually said, oh, started last year, that was it, they weren't printing anymore. So everybody knew there was a second edition coming, but it's taken almost a full year of playtesting, and they actually went and did a few more Saga books in between because they weren't at the position where they were ready to launch. So, it's going to be curious. It's running, obviously, Studio Tomahawk do the French version, but North Star do the English language version, and they're currently have it trucking through Kickstarter at the moment, so they've unlocked a few additional models if people are going to jump in early on, and they also have the option of winning some interesting little prizes because the way they throw the things together.
Yeah. Well, you've got some of the miniatures here, which are pretty cool looking.
Yeah, so there are quite a few companies out there that do models that will fit for this range, but they've got their own range of Native American sculpted in this. to bring to it. These two that aren't painted are two of the next starter exclusives.
Yeah.
So it's always good to wave the bloody heart of your enemy at your opponent, letting them know exactly where they stand on things.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah.
Very cool.
Breakfast is served.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Right. My main piece of news this week has got to be the British release for World War III. Team Yankee, World War III.
Yeah.
Boom! Wait till you see this. You're going to absolutely love it. Jill
is
sitting
vibrating in the corner for this. Oh.
Ben, let's have a look at this, man.
Yeah, so this is a new big starter set for the British. It comes with a whole bunch of different tanks and helicopters and all sorts of different things like that. There's also some sort of like more artillery pieces and stuff that you can throw into the mix as well, which I think is really nice. All of it's been done to sort of work with the new World War III style for Team Yankee, which is kind of like their new version that they're going in, where it's a little bit more of a global conflict than it is just the, you know, the fight between the Soviets and the Americans, that kind of thing. They've also been looking at a whole bunch of different options as well to sort of supplement the starter set going forward. So you've got things like the Challenger Armored Troop, the Fox Recce Troop, and the M109 Artillery Battery. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think is really cool about this as well is that, as well as this being a selection of different releases that will be perfect for those people who are playing as the British, this also gives you a whole bunch of different options for those people playing as the likes of the Canadians, the Dutch, the Iranians, the Israelis, and stuff like that as well. So if you're actually one of those people that supports from those different factions, you can already get some of the different options, both on, you know, with a lot of their vehicles and tanks and that kind of thing, and then use them in your forces that you may have from the previous versions of the game as well, which I think is really nice. We actually had John this week sitting down with Battlefront to talk about sort of like an overview of the world of Team Yankee. So if this kind of idea of World War III and this sort of Cold War gone hot appeals to you, you can go and check that out, which is very nice indeed. And there are going to be lots and lots more releases coming out for World War III and the British and, of course, all the other factions over the next year or so. So watch out if you like these big modern tanks blowing stuff up on the battlefield.
I am seeing that there's some of the boxes here that are showing multiple nation flags, so I'm guessing all those nations can take them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that to me is absolutely superb. Mm-hmm. Firstly, these models are beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. But if you scroll down there, Justin, right?
Yeah.
There's one of them there.
The Warrior Platoon, is it?
There's one that has like just a whole heap
of...
go two up.
Two up.
That one. Yes. Check that out.
So the M109 artillery battery.
Look, so the Americans can use it, the British can use it, the Germans can use it, Canadians, the Dutch... and the Iranians and the Israelis. It's like,
and this
everybody's going to buy a box of that.
Well, this is now folding in the oil war stuff into World War III.
It makes perfect sense.
Oh, yeah.
Grab the whole thing and just bring it all together and just have one beautiful Third World War system. Mm. It's great. You know, so I can't help but think, right, to the Reagan-Gorbachev years.
Yes.
Right? Now, Reagan and Gorbachev got on quite well, it seems. But imagine if the assassination of Reagan had succeeded, right? And one of the more warmongery guys came in after that.
Yeah.
You know, I just see scenarios everywhere. And the fact that it's now opened up, it's not just the Fulga Gap or whatever that we're looking at now. We can basically start to place, you can do Red Dawn. At this scale, you know, you can pick anywhere in the world, and start to build up the scenarios, the what if scenarios that would have happened if they had to face off against each other. So, I can definitely see some Middle East stuff going on here.
I mean, like, it's one of the factions that has tempted me the most for this scale has been the Israelis.
Yeah,
you know, I love the look of some of the vehicles and the troops, and just it could be fun.
Wouldn't it be interesting to map World War II to World War III, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, because with all these minis and things like that, do you know the way you had Montgomery and stuff coming up through the Med, the Mediterranean, and stuff? So you could start to almost pick World War II battles and but refit them with World War III level kit.
Yeah.
Just to see what might happen, how it might play out.
So refighting the Battle of the Bulge could be an interesting one.
Yeah, it's
only instead of the Germans, it's the Russians pushing through the Ardennes.
Yeah, but even with this, you could even have the Germans. Like, who's to say that World War III necessarily has to be the Soviets? You know,
it's, you're looking at the East Germans then.
Yeah. Well, let's say
East Germans.
Let's say Hasselhoff went rogue, right? And instead of doing a gig to bring down the Berlin Wall, he did a gig and said, "No, let's all rise up again and let's be a Fourth Reich," right?
I often imagine people Hasselhoff saying just that.
So you know, so Hasselhoff leading the Fourth Reich. Mm. You know, and of course, with it being Hasselhoff, he will only do battles on the beaches, where he gets to get his kit off.
Yeah. And all the tanks have to have little red strips.
Yes, little red strips. So he would be there in his Speedos. We'll get a 15mm Hasselhoff in his Speedos, Justin. Uh-huh. And he will be there, and we'll pitch him on top of a tank as a commander. Uh-huh. And it should be amazing, man.
It would be certainly something.
If you have ideas of how World War III would pan out, I would love to hear them. And by the way, if you comment to win, do you know what? If you comment to win, right, and we pick your comment and it's about World War III, right, as well as sending you that chaos box, we'll get something from the Team Yankee and chuck it in there as well for you.
Ooh, from the new release set.
Yeah. So if your comment is about World War III. We'll get both items in there. Yeah?
All right, go for it.
There's a bit of something. Yeah?
Yeah. I'll be interested to see where they go.
That is the news. Mm. Now it's time for something experimental, okay?
Yeah.
This is that difficult second album kind of thing now, Justin, okay? Yeah. It's going to be Justin's Wheel of Misfortune. You know I love you, don't you?
Yes. I know the community loves me too, so they're going to love this.
So, we wanted to do something that was like a public service for our community.
Yeah.
Okay? So we started to think of interesting kind of tasks, challenges, maybe? Basically, Justin, I want to turn you into Hercules.
I was about to say, is this like the labors of Hercules?
Yes, it's exactly like the labors of Hercules.
Right, I don't think people are going to be okay with me going out and hunting down an Nemean lion.
Okay, maybe not the lion bit, but it's almost exactly like the rest of it, okay?
Really, with the Hydra and Medusa?
Okay, maybe not the Hydra, and maybe not Medusa, and maybe not the lion, but it's exactly like the rest of it.
Okay.
Okay, and so, this is the Wheel of Misfortune.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, each week, the wheel will guide us. It will guide us onto a new task that
will a recurring task.
It could be recurring, but we wanted to come up with tasks that ultimately we as a community would benefit from.
Right.
Not just laughing our arses off, but actually something that we could take away from it. Okay. So,
would you like to guide people through the wheel then?
Well, no. The wheel will become self-explanatory.
So is this the wheel of discovery now as well?
It is the wheel of discovery of misfortune that works the same way as Hercules' trials.
People can read that anyway. They can draw their own conclusions and post below what they think some of these are.
Please be nice to me.
So, Jerry, are we ready? Is the wheel ready?
Yeah, we're ready totally for whatever could come up, anything at all. It might be anything, we're not sure.
Yeah.
Possibly.
So, okay. So, Justin.
Yeah.
For your inaugural spinning of the wheel.
Oh, I get to spin.
You can spin the wheel.
So my fate's in my own hands.
Your fate is absolutely in your own hands. Whatever happens from here
is
down to you. So, all together now. Justin, spin that wheel.
We're looking around. Turn. Show us the lesson that we must learn.
Well, on.
Here she goes.
Something juicy.
Oh! Oh!
Lubinator.
None of us could possibly have expected that.
The Lubinator, Justin. Lubinator, right, so.
I feel this needs some explanation.
Okay, right. Every challenge has a backstory. Okay?
Right.
So one of the challenges, Lubinator kind of applies to lots of different kind of challenges, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to explain it to you now. Okay, Justin, we have you all set up. So this challenge is all about a homage to the painting scientists at Games Workshop.
Okay.
And other painting providers.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I see you've given me a really nice Orc Commando. I think I unboxed this guy ages ago and really loved the look of it.
I'm surprised if you remember where he comes from.
Oh, was he Artel?
Yes, he was.
Well done. Beautiful miniature from
Artel.
You
get to live.
So, Games Workshop, okay, released contrast paints and said that there will never be grey minis again.
Right.
Okay? So, we had thought, well, that must mean minimum effort, okay? Yeah. So I did a straw poll, okay, of all of the OTTers, the otters and stuff like that, to try and find out what do we consider minimum effort, okay? And unanimously, we said 60 seconds.
That's more than sufficient for most miniatures.
What?
So what we've done here, okay, so we're undead. We're not unreasonable.
Right.
So what we did is we picked four fine colors for you. So if you have a wee look, there's your four colors.
Yeah, so you've given me some Orc Flesh.
Yes, because he's an orc.
Yes.
You've given me some Griffcharger Grey, because there's a big rock on his base. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Well, if you can do the rock, great.
You've given me some form of blue.
Emphatic blue.
That's for his testicles.
Yep. Right, and Flesh Terror's red.
That's for his lips.
Berry.
That's for his lips. Make him look like a pig with lipstick. Okay?
Okay.
So, 60 seconds to print a mini.
Yeah.
To paint a mini.
Yeah.
It will be somewhat challenging.
Yeah.
I had thought it might help a little bit. So, you know.
It's probably the best
this
video, yeah.
This is for wallpaper. I know.
What about that one then? That's for your detail work.
Well, I did used to joke that I would paint with a 3-inch brush. I'm not going to paint with a 3-inch brush today, especially not with the price of contrast paint.
Well, we got you a selection of brushes there.
So I've got some nice army painter ones here.
You have your brushes.
I have the vehicle terrain brush, which I think is going to be useful because I have so little time. I have.
Yeah, it's
who gave me the psycho?
Yes, well, you have lots of brushes. I have these
for you. Character's okay, and I've got a detail brush.
Obsessed with brushes.
I have these, right? Because this is all about the whole purpose of this challenge and
how
all these challenges.
Meant to get enough paint on that to go down again.
It's all about innovation, man. And I think you could innovate. So these are yours as well. So they're kind of little spongy brushes. Hold them under there so we can see them.
Okay, so little spongy
brushes.
I'll try.
He's not as interested in these brushes.
Okay.
There's one final step. Unfortunately, you didn't just land on paint it. Because if you'd landed on paint it, this would have been fairly straightforward.
Yes.
60 seconds, you would have had that painted. But unfortunately, you landed on Lubinator. So every gamer knows.
What is this mysterious tube of horror? Right.
Mysterious. Okay. You've got five of these in your desk drawer.
What?
the purpose of this is where I've told you everything has a story, okay? So this is, you've went to Games Day, okay?
Right.
And you at Games Day, you've sat down to paint a mini at one of their little painting demos, okay? And Jez Goodwin walks by, okay? Or Jervis Johnson walks by.
Let's say Jez. I like Jez.
Yeah. So you like Jez.
Yeah,
so,
I like Jez.
So you basically, you start to get sweaty palms and emissions and things like that there. and things can it start to get more difficult. So what we're doing is we're simulating that moment with Jerry's OptiLube that he's willing to share with you. Okay.
Okay.
So it might make things more challenging.
I mean, you could you at least do me the favor of springing for KY.
Okay, well, no, man, we're on a budget here, okay? We're on a budget. We can't do that big brand stuff here. So besides, I hear very good things about OptiLube.
All right, so how sticky do I need to get myself here?
Well,
we're going the other way. You just hold your hands out.
Yeah, just hold
it
out.
And I'll provide.
Okay. Under the camera.
Is it one hand or two?
No, it's both hands.
Both hands.
So let's
just work that in there, son.
Right, so work that into your hands there.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Don't you worry, I'm just
going to.
I'm going to help you here.
Everywhere.
I'll just give that a little bit.
On my wet palate.
Well, that's probably
Can I use this to break down it?
Okay.
Oh, God. Look. Look.
I've given you a wee bit there. That's delightful.
Okay, so, right, so here we go, okay? So we have our timer, okay? So we're going to give you a 10-second count in.
Okay.
And then you have 60 seconds.
Get another blob on there.
To completely paint.
You're tripping onto our mat. The lube isn't.
Yes, that's it. That's more like it. That'll make it extra sticky, okay?
That'll help you adhere You're greasing up the mat.
Nice.
Oh, there's puddles. Oh, we'll get the brushes in there.
Oh, nice. Do you see how nice we are?
Why could you do this?
Right. Okay. Are we ready?
I think so.
Justin?
Yeah.
I'm going to count you in, okay?
Okay.
Remember, so it's speed, accuracy. These are the things we'll
nine,
be working on.
9, 8, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go! Go!
Always reaching for the green.
Oh, he went straight in for the green.
I didn't even look at what I was going for.
Controversial.
Right, flash.
Okay, Justin, 10 seconds down, man. You can do it. See, nice. Good brush control there, man. That's it. Come on, hurry up, man. Hurry up. You're dripping on it. You're dripping on it.
Oh, he's just chucking.
You can do it. You can do it. Look at that brush control, man. Come on, Justin, hurry up, man. Justin, 30 seconds, half your time is gone. Half your time is gone. Come on, Justin, hurry up, man. You can do it. Look at that wet blending. It's almost like he's like an expert at this.
He's a practice.
Look at that wet blending. 15 seconds, Justin. Come on, you can do it. Come on, Justin.
You don't use all 10, the colors to loop.
9, I can't get paint on the brush.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3,
okay, screw
2,
it.
1, brand.
Were you applying the lube at the end?
I gave up on the cycle and I thought, hell's with this. I'm going to dip the back end and wipe that off. And I got some better coverage.
You're cheating now. Your time is up, okay? So it is now time to see the end results of this, okay? So this is contrast.
talk us through your motivation for this color scheme.
Yes.
So I was inspired by Picasso.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, clearly. Clearly.
Because more Jackson it's Pollock. Everywhere, it's messy. I think if we ever do this again, I want lots of big brushes.
I'm more interested in his Spider-Man hands.
Yeah. So do you feel like you've just met Jez?
Yeah, this feels like Jez right now. This feels like Jez.
It's great. It's great. Here. Let me.
I'm sorry. I feel like I've abused this gorgeous, beautiful Artel miniature. Guys, I'm sorry. At Artel, I love your work.
Has anyone got a tissue? Because I ruined my finger.
You need a tissue.
So, Justin, that leaves new tissues to you, Justin.
Your wet blending skills are fine. Well, you know, it's not exactly Angel Geraldes' level of paint job.
It's green. It's red. It's
don't touch me, man.
You're sloughing off onto the mat.
Did you want this tissue? Did you?
No.
No, but look, I thought, right, he's got some blood on his teeth, he's got his red beret, you know, his skin is green, the gun is a little bit blue,
okay. And
the rock is most definitely grey.
Do you know what? I think it's a fine paint job, Justin.
Any 7-year-old would be proud.
I have seen worse.
I'm reclaiming this miniature to take home and give some tender, loving care to after this abuse.
Will I put another 60 seconds on the clock?
No. No. This is an RTL piece of art. It deserves better.
Well, I tell you what, then. On a future Weekender, then, you can bring it in.
Yes, I will bring in what I have done to it.
With your touch-up.
Yes,
okay.
with my miniatures ER.
Right.
If you remember that, show everybody.
Justin, that's a great service
here.
To the gaming community
there.
Right. It's time to get Ben back. Let's check out some Kickstarters. So after that mess, thank God, Ben is back. It's time to do Kickstarter Watch. Ben, what have you got for us this week?
Okay, yeah, so the first one we're looking at this week is from Bard Games, and it is The Lost Worlds of Josh Kirby. So this is a 2-to-5-player board game where you'll take on the role of iconic empires which have been influenced by his artwork. For those people who don't know who Josh Kirby is, he did artwork for a lot of the Discworld covers. He's also done stuff for Return of the Jedi and Tunnels and Trolls, if that also rings a bell. The game itself is one of galactic domination where you take control of these empires. What you'll be doing at the start of a turn is rolling your dice, and this will decide the different types of actions that you can take. You'll be then using your powers and abilities and all the sort of resources that you've controlled to go and take over different planets. Now, the ways that you can take over planets are very different as well. You could do it by negotiation, by trying to be nice and peaceful, or you could do it by force, by trying to take them over and destroy them and then take whatever resources they have into your thing.
The person
who reaches the target number of worlds for the end of the game becomes the winner. And yeah, as you can see, very nice looking and very aesthetically pleasing game, which I think is very nice indeed.
Yeah.
They've also done some really nice stuff when it comes to the sort of stretch goals and add-ons for this game as well. So as well as the sort of core base game, which allows you to play just sort of one-off scenarios, you can also pick up what's called the Space Opera Mode box, which comes with one of the Kickstarter options. And this allows you to have a game where every single set time you sit down to play the game, you influence this sort of ongoing narrative throughout the rest of your campaign as you go forward. So for every world that you conquer and name and that kind of thing, and for the different resources you take and who you beat, you'll be adding stickers onto this really awesome galactic map. We'll start to sort of map out the progress between all the different games you've played. The very core basics of everything doesn't change. That's all the same. So you can still just sit down and play this game with all your different friends and things like that. But if you want to dive in and play something that has a little bit more of a narrative to it as well, then they have that option in the mix too. From Bard Games. So yeah, very cool looking stuff.
There you go.
Very cool.
So it's 19 days left on that one. So if you fancy a bit of that, go and check it out. This next one is massive. Absolutely massive. Yeah. So this is the Altered Carbon RPG, and Hunters Entertainment is doing this one.
Is this based on the TV show?
Yeah. 17 days left. Mm-hmm. 1,000%
funded.
1,000% funded. Ben, we didn't expect any less, really, did we?
Well, no, yeah. The Altered Carbon TV series from Netflix has done exceptionally well. Everyone loves that one. And obviously, it's born from a book series as well, which is also very well loved. But this role-playing game by Hunters Entertainment takes you into this deep, gritty, almost noir cyberpunk world the guys at Hunters Entertainment have built for this. They use a system which is very much sort of drawn from the idea of Savage Worlds, where all of your different stats and abilities are done by different dice scores. But an interesting twist in the format, instead of wanting to roll high, you're wanting to roll low. So the higher your dice, the less chance of you getting the sort of target numbers that you need, which is very interesting. If you're interested in how it all sort of plays and stuff like that, Becca Scott, who a lot of people will know, has done a really nice sort of introductory video that goes through a lot of the rule mechanics and things. But there's also a quick start version of the rules that you can download in PDF, and you can give those a go yourself as well. For those that aren't aware of this kind of cyberpunk world, one of the big focuses of it is that there's almost this sort of like feel of eternal life within the world of Altered Carbon, where you can transfer between sleeves, which are sort of human bodies, if you can afford it. So when you die, death isn't the end. And that's something that has been worked into the very mechanics of this game for you to play on the tabletop. So when your character dies, that's not necessarily the end of their character. They can carry on in a new shell, a new sleeve, and continue to play through the game as the character, but with lots of new abilities and that kind of thing as well. The other aspect of this as well is that when you die, obviously that's a very traumatic thing, and so a lot of the ghosts from your past will transfer over into your psyche as well, which is very interesting too. As I say, this sounds like a very interesting system that they've built here, which is almost specifically built for the world of Altered Carbon and that idea of resleeving and immortality as well. And it'd be very interesting what kind of different characters people play in this. And I really got the idea that even if something really unlucky happens to you, you could come back as your character just a little bit different and a little bit wrong potentially as well. So yeah, very awesome looking game from this one. Lots of really nice artwork, lots of thought gone into the mechanics as well. Definitely want to check out if you like role-playing games and you like cyberpunk stuff as well.
This creeps me out, the whole reskinning thing. And the idea of coming back a little bit wrong, that just freaks me out.
Is life is cruel sometimes.
Is it just too close to reality for you?
See, I've seen the entire season one, and I absolutely adore it. I can't wait for season two, and I would love to play about in this world.
Yeah. Looking around this room, how many times have we been re-slaved then, huh?
70.
I'm not even going to go down that route. Right, one last Kickstarter then. This one is... It's another piggy. It's another CMON Kickstarter.
Okay, so this is a new one that comes from the guys at CMON Games and also Spin Master Games as well. And this is a 2-4 player game. It takes about 40 minutes to play. It's fully cooperative, and the idea is that you're going to be playing as a whole bunch of the Marvel heroes from the universe that everybody knows and loves now from the cinema, and you're going to be taking on villains and all their nefarious schemes on the tabletop. The focus of this game mechanically is all around sort of card-based combat, because what's going to happen in the game is that you'll be able to play a card, and you'll just follow the rules of it. So it might be moving and attacking thugs, it might be thwarting threats, it might be saving civilians. But then the person who then plays the card after you will not only benefit from the icons on their card, but also the card played previously. So there's a real sense that you'll be sitting down at the tabletop to play through this game very cooperatively and sort of working out the sort of strategy that you can plan to defeat the final villain. The villains themselves range in style from Red Skull to Taskmaster as well, who a lot of people might know as well from the comic books. And there's also Ultron in there too, which is very nice. From the core sort of heroes in the main box, you've got Hulk, Captain America, Black Widow, Captain Marvel, and Iron Man. And all of them have their own sort of focus to them as well, which is really nice to see. As well as that, there are a whole bunch of Kickstarter exclusives for this one. One thing that should definitely be said from the outset effectively with this one is that a lot of this has been done specifically for the idea of it being a Kickstarter game. There are a lot of Kickstarter exclusives, and even though this one's going to come to retail, there's a lot of things that you're not going to be able to get if you don't back the campaign. So you can weigh that up and see what you think about that one. But anyway, as I was saying, when it comes to expansions and stuff for this one, there is one called the Infinity Gauntlet, which throws into the mix Thanos and the Black Order. Now, in this game mode, a little bit like we were talking about earlier with the idea of campaigns, you'll be playing against each of the three Black Order villains in turn, trying to stop them finding the Infinity Stones, which will then get put into the gauntlet that Thanos uses, obviously, to do his snap and things in the MCU. So what you'll be doing is you'll be playing through each of these different three scenarios, and then you'll be fighting off in a main battle against Thanos at the very end, hopefully having denied him some of the Infinity Stones, which make him equally more powerful. But yeah, loads of Kickstarter exclusives to this one. Obviously, the chibi style is something that you're obviously going to have to love if you want to dive in and give this one a go. They're at $60 for the sort of core pledge for this and all the different stretch goals and things. It's not too bad. Obviously, bear in mind the idea of shipping, because if you're looking at things for the EU and that kind of thing, it's about $30 to $45 extra. So you're looking more around the $100 mark for the Kickstarter in total. Mm. So bear that in mind again when it comes to the cost for this. If this is something that you just can't afford, there are a whole bunch of other Marvel products out there as well. So it behoves me to tell you that there's like the likes of Marvel Champions, which is the card game for that sort of cooperative feel, if you like that side of things. Or if you like miniatures, you've also got Atomic Mass Games and their game Marvel Crisis Protocol, if you want to do the hobbying thing as well. But yeah, as I say, actually looks pretty awesome in terms of the mechanics and stuff. It's by Eric Lang, so I'm sure Justin will turn off this one immediately. But yeah, really nice looking game, really cool miniatures. I think they really look nice. But yeah, it's whether or not you want to dive in and do this one as a solely Kickstarter project for yourself. That's the sort of toss up here for everybody. But yeah.
Right, that's your lot. That's your three Kickstarters for this week. And now it's time to give away this week's freebie. Okay, so we're giving away free 3D terrain this week, okay? This is the bad boy that we're giving away. It's called the Necrosia Pillar Tomb, okay? Let me give it to Jerry to model there for you. Just look at that! Okay, so it's from a Kickstarter from Kraken Industries, a brand new small company just starting out. Bring up their Kickstarter and we get a look. So this is, they're doing a whole range of what they call Necrosia kind of 3D terrain. Mm-hmm. Basically, you Necron players, this is your best friend. You grab this stuff and you grab yourself a 3D printer, and you will be creating Necron homeworlds for the rest of your days.
I am loving how they're playing with the different levels of terrain on this. I kind of want to print the entirety of this world.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was looking at this and I was thinking, this would make an incredible Necron table. Mm-hmm. Even for here in the visitor center. I just would love to do something like this. Look at all of the different components.
65 floor tiles. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Do you know what would make this more epic, though? It's Chris and his LED lighting.
Oh, yes. If you haven't seen it yet, for all of you Cult of Games members, the supporters of the On Tabletop project, we recently, on Sunday past there, we put out a video for you guys where we had Chris Blinky from the site came in and is showing us the basics of adding electronics to our miniatures and to our terrain. So if you've ever fancied working with LED kits and stuff, come across, join the Cult of Games, and that video is sitting there waiting for you.
Because the great thing about Necron stuff is it's the prime candidate for doing like
everything.
See all that green glows and blue glows or whatever colored mm-hmm. scheme you go with. Just awesome.
Just acrylic rods everywhere.
And the beauty of doing it with 3D prints is that you could actually modify the 3D prints to put the holes and the channels in there for the LED lighting.
Yeah.
Right, so you're not worrying about not drilling out and, and stuff. So
I did bend Chris's ear a little bit while I was here talking about how would I actually do it with a 3D file, and he just went, well, just get the main components you need, your battery packs, figure out where your cabling is going, and just hollow it through in like a CAD design file.
Yeah.
And your other option is to print some of it with clear resins and things as well. Yeah.
See, this is what I want to do, because I want to do a plasma pistol, but I want to make it glow.
Well, in terms of working with transparencies, yes, you could work, you could do your transparencies in clear resin, but equally, your transparent filament in an FDM printer will work just as well.
Yeah,
and for the likes of a plasma, because the end result is not crystal clear, it's not like clear ice, you know, glass kind of transparency. It's slightly opaque, slightly diffused. Mm-hmm. But that diffused look, when you put blue LEDs in there, will just make it glow. You know, it'll just go. So for printing props like plasma pistols and things like that, there, clear filament through your FDM printer every time.
For example, we have this in front of us.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Now it's printed in obviously a solid.
Yes.
ABS. If this was printed in a clear one, could you then paint everything else?
Well, that's PLA, that's not ABS.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to talk you through the print on that. So the print time on that was about 24 hours.
Roughly,
okay,
yeah.
We're going to show you our settings and stuff and talk a little bit about it. It was a 24-hour print, okay, printed in PLA, okay, PLA filament. And we printed that at a 0.02.
Do you want me to bring this up before you, Warren?
Could that be printed then in a clear material?
Yes, we could have printed that in clear PLA.
And then you could mask it off if you really wanted to get into it. And all the wee lines would glow if you made a hole in the base of this.
Yeah. Yes. And depending on what you have, there are some of the slicer programs out there allow you just to tell that to be hollow on the inside.
Yeah. Absolutely, printing that in a clear PLA gives you all sorts of interesting options from the perspective of adding light.
Cool.
And the beauty of that, Lloyd, is that you don't necessarily have to worry about electronics. Like if you put a big enough hole in that,
just put a big tea.
You could put like a big tea light in it. Or what I've seen recently is these kind of like waterproof lights that you can put into your bath, and they come with a remote control, so you can change the color of them as well. We've used them in some of our layouts in the visitor center from time
lights
to time.
In the bath?
Yeah, so they're waterproof. and it just
so
basically.
You see where the toast goes when you drop your toast that you've got on the side of your bath as well.
who needs lights in their bath?
Well, these are
someone
kind of like.
Out there, someone.
Relaxing, color changing lights. Some of us like our baths to be kind of spa-like, Lloyd.
I like my bath to be scalding hot, and I can just fall asleep in it for an hour.
A bath full of bubbles, as I don't see myself.
All right, yes. Right, Let's have a look, Justin, at our setup. So
So we're running Cura,
yeah,
which is a really simple slicer program to run with.
Free slicer program. Yeah. It's the one that we typically use here in the studio all the time.
You can program in pretty much any 3D printer into this.
Yeah.
So depending on which one you have, this one's set for an Anycubic i3 Mega. It's one of the main ones that we use.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got your preset drop down here. So we did it at normal, but you could go to like high settings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
For the settings, you've got your main shell. So this is telling you how thick your walls are going to be that you're going to be printing. And then on the inside of that, you have like an infill. So you're not printing a solid piece. This is hollow on the inside.
So let's just look at the firstly, if you want to rotate around the model so they can get a bit of a view of the model. So the model, we printed it completely without supports.
Yep.
It printed absolutely fine without supports. We didn't see much in the way of stringing. There were no failures. It just printed really well and nice and easy. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that a lot of the 3D guys are doing these days is they're designing. I know Printable Scenery does this. A lot of their models are designed with the appropriate angles so that they can just print without supports.
Yeah.
Well, what were the key settings that we set though, Justin?
All right. So our main layer height was 0.2
not
thickness,
0.2, yeah.
Right? Our shell, we did a three-layer wall count on it, so it's about maybe 1.5 to 2 mil thickness on the walls. That gives it some rigidity, some strength.
Yeah.
We then moved on to our infill.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is something some people go way overboard with.
This is the bit that I'm interested in, the whole infill stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
So infill is basically building an internal structure, which is going to really make it solid. Me, I push it down pretty hard on most of the prints that I do because it just takes time and you don't need as much as you think.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever the standard setting for normal is 25% infill,
yeah,
I push that down to 10%. Mm-hmm. So it's still nice and strong, but it cuts down on your print time a nice chunk.
So did we print that one at 10% infill?
That's how I generally print our stuff.
Well, there you go.
All right. We've got that castle. See, that
this,
I'm
yeah, we have this. This is where we have the battle of the infills.
Yeah.
I prefer a little bit more infill because I don't like to feel my models squish under my hands. And if you don't put enough infill in shell,
yeah,
you can actually squish your model to death.
Yeah.
I'm being a clumsy guy.
So you're like sitting there gripping it hard like that?
Gripping it hard, Lloyd. Gripping it hard.
The infill pattern was specifically set to grid.
Yes.
So you have a drop down here with a lot of different options for the types you can do. Some of them are better for making something super strong.
Mm-hmm.
Others are better for speed. Grid, I find, is great for speed, and it gives you a decent strength to your model.
Yeah. I have found a new infill pattern that I believe is coming to Cura. If it hasn't come already, it might be one of the experimental plugins.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, what it does is it changes your infill pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So what it does is it does big infill in big areas and smaller infill in the smaller areas.
I like the idea of that.
So it's a really kind of intelligent infill. So that infill is like a crisscross inside. So
yeah, because generally it's accepted that hexagonal is the most efficient and strongest.
Well, hexagonal was, but they've now developed infills because 3D printing is so versatile in because it's building everything up in a layer height. They now have almost like curved cup infills that are kind of really weird, kind of curvy shapes and stuff. They've so many different types. If there was one that was just the best, they would only have the one. There's just loads of them now.
Yeah, and I think the more experience you get, it's more type for purpose.
Yes.
Depending on what you're wanting to achieve.
Yeah.
So that's our infill.
Yep, so you're 10%.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, just 10%, set to grid, and nice and simple.
Yeah.
The material, this is important. So whenever we first got our 3D printers, the material is set to be at a melting temperature of 190 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the standard setting is. We push that up by 10 degrees. We find it just makes it flow a little bit nicer out of the head, and it just lets everything bind a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
We also increased the temperature of our build plate from, I believe it was 45 up to 60,
mm-hmm.
because the build plate on your 3D printer, that is essentially a porous material that whenever it heats up, it grips, and when it cools down, it lets go again.
Mm-hmm.
So being that little hotter, it just holds a little harder.
Yeah, not only that, but it'll also most hopefully keep your print nice and flat, because what can happen is if it cools, you can find your print will start to pull off the bed in a corner. So to try and keep it flat and level and completely stuck to the bed, increasing that bed temperature a little bit. Now, the beauty of PLA is PLA is my favorite FDM material because it's just it's almost foolproof. ABS, you can print in ABS, but the problem with ABS is you need an enclosure. It's very, very temperature sensitive. So seeing prints like this just rock out in PLA, nice and easy, no hassles.
I will say you can get bad PLA. You remember the red stuff I got? I got a cheap PLA.
Never.
But because I cheaped out, it really didn't work.
Let me tell you about cheap PLA. It's worth spending the little bit extra to get branded PLA.
Yep.
Cheap PLA is full of air bubbles, which means that you end up with lots of little kind of holes and weak points in your print. Mm-hmm. The PLA itself may not be a standard thickness the whole way through, which means that it can sometimes over-extrude and then under-extrude. Mm-hmm. And we've even heard of cheap PLAs having particles and bits of dirt and stuff in it, which just ends up blocking the nozzle on the print head. Mm-hmm. So it's really worth staying away from the cheap PLA because the time that you waste on failed prints, it's worth the extra $4 or $5 that you're going to spend to get the branded stuff.
I mean, like that stuff I got, it wouldn't even bind together in the layers properly. Mm-hmm. And I started pushing the temperature pretty hard on it to try and say, okay, it's maybe just not melting enough. It's maybe not hot enough to actually bind.
Garbage.
And all I got was crap stuff, and it was just easy to squeeze and crunchy and break.
Right. Last sentence. Let's rattle through this.
Next one is speed.
Yes.
We run this at 40. You can run it faster, but the slower you run with your printer, the smoother you're going to get it. The less chance you have of something getting knocked out of place, or if something's going to start getting wavy lines on the outside, because whenever it's moving, it can stop, and sometimes it stops too sharp because it's going too fast.
Yes, you can get...
And that can knock you off your actual positioning.
And it can also give you like little kind of wavy, jittery artifacts through your print.
Yeah.
Where the thing is moving so fast that it almost...
Vibrating?
You start to see a wave pattern appear in it. So for us, we tend to set the printers up. We have cameras and we have anti-fire devices and stuff on our printers, so we tend to set them up and just let them run. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite content a lot of the time for us to slow the print job down, just to, again, to make it a bit less likely to fail, because one of the other things we find is if we run the printers too fast is sometimes it'll start printing, and then you come in the next day, and halfway through, the whole thing is kind of shifted over a little bit.
Yep.
So it started printing here, and then next thing, the rest of it's been printed here, and it's all kind of out of whack.
Yeah.
We believe that is from running your printer potentially too fast.
Yeah, and that's pretty much all the main settings we would have a play with.
So there was no supports or anything like that?
Now, there is one setting that I always like to change. Your build plate adhesion, I always like to use a brim.
Yeah.
So you can do a skirt, and that gives you a nice flat layer running out and around it. Mm-hmm. The brim, on the other hand, it basically draws three lines around the outside of your miniature before moving in to do the actual miniature itself. I like that because as it's laying down those first three layers, you can actually check on the four corners of your print bed to make sure everything's leveled and caught properly before it starts printing your miniature.
There you go. Yeah. Right. So if you fancy it, guys, that model is available from store.ontabletop.com.
I have it here.
If you go through to it, it's the Necrosia Pillar Tomb. The link is in the show notes.
Yeah, currently set to private at time of filming.
Yep, so the time of film is private, but it's in the show notes. It's completely free of charge. You just go and create yourself an account. You can then download it, and it'll be set that you'll always be able to go back and download it again. And we'd love to see what you guys do with that. So if you decide to print that and paint it up, please consider coming across to ontabletop.com and create a project and share your progress with the rest of us.
I want to see it painted up like a Gunstar. Tell me that's not the Gunstar from the last Starfighter.
Yes.
It is a bit.
It really is. Just Death Blossoms all over. That's what I want to see.
Especially if you're doing any sort of lighting effects and stuff like that. It'd be awesome to see.
Go on, Greg. Death Blossom.
So, if you fancy also supporting the new little business of Kraken Industries, please do head on over to their Kickstarter. You could get yourself a complete table's worth of Necron terrain. It's an absolute no-brainer. And the beauty of Necron terrain is you don't have to play Necrons to be fighting on Necron terrain.
Holy crap. I just saw the pledge level.
Yes.
There are two pledge levels. There's the $1 pledge level, which is, hey, thanks, you want to help us?
Yes.
And then there's one other pledge level, which I believe gets you everything.
Yes.
Holy hell, that's good value.
It is good value. It is good value.
They recently upgraded from clips for the walls to integral magnetic points.
Oh,
so
nice.
There's little 3D printable clips, because I was looking through his videos earlier on today. Mm. And the magnetic one you have to see anyway, simply because at one point he lifts the thing up and he's putting the magnet together and he's putting another wall on the other side and the magnet, and I'm going, oh, it's like a magic show. And then he starts doing this with his hand, showing that there's nothing going on. I'm going, oh, he's just missing a little steel hook, and we're there.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely a Kickstarter worth checking out, guys. I can totally envisage beautiful Necro. Like, bring that up. Wouldn't you see this?
Yeah.
Check this.
Just some gorgeous
text. Look at that. Just look at that. That is, and even that paint scheme that I did there, I'm quite happy with the likes of that paint scheme. Like, Jerry, if you hold that up, that is literally just primed black and then dusted. So primed black from a black spray can, like a Chaos Black, and then I let it dry, and then I just dust it with gray sear. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of dusting.
Straight out of the rattle can.
Straight out of two rattle cans, and you have that.
You're done. Mm-hmm. You're ready to put Jack O'Neill and the rest of Stargate?
Yes.
On the table? Yeah.
I don't know, I'm kind of wanting to drop Kefaya's Cane down with some Valhalla.
Well, if you take that and then, I would quite happily have an entire table of that, just to get me started. Mm-hmm. And then later, you could always come back to it and do a bit of airbrushing, you know, to try and light up some of the green, the green gluey bits.
See, even if you did like a pin wash on that, just on the green gluey bits, could look great.
Yeah.
It's too dark. You would have to find a way of getting the recesses to be much brighter.
Well, no. Well, what you do first
hit
is you hit them with white, and then you put your color over the top of that, and then you can create a really fast source lighting effect. See. But if you don't have an airbrush and you want to get it on the table quickly, bang! I'd be happy to play on that. Right, guys, thank you so much. Tomorrow, over on tabletop.com, we have XLBS. It's the exclusive Cult of Games show for ourselves and the Cult of Games community, where we get in all sorts of trouble. Tomorrow, though, I want to raise a topic with you guys, and that is I struggle to remember the rules of games. So I'm working on a game at the moment, and I'm trying to create a game that doesn't require a rule book.
Alexa needs to help us. Alexa, how do you play this damn game?
So if you're interested in game design or just want to see what happens behind the scenes, you would be most, most welcome to come and join us in the Cult of Games and the XLBS on Sunday over on Tabletop.
Alexa, set a reminder for Cult of Games.
Sunday morning. Right, guys, this has been The Weekender. We are the team trying to keep you up to date. You have been awesome. Happy gaming. Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.